gagged. Ha, where you gone, you crowling fairly? Your impudence protects you fairly. I canny say, but you strunt rarely. Our gauze and lace, though faith, I fear you dine but sparely on such a place. Oh, what some power the gift to give, to see yourselves as others see us, that wad for money a blunder free us, and foolish motion, what airs and dress and gait would leave us, and even devotion.
This week in the USA has been a gross insult to the survivors of the Holocaust. In their memory, Trump gave the order to begin detaining Muslims. Thankfully, as I speak, that order has been overturned by a federal judge, and the resistance to Trump, vocal, peaceful, and many in numbers, gave us hope. The shame does not stop at the American coast. No, our own Tory Prime Minister, Theresa May, at best an appeaser of the Chamberlain scale, at worst, and I would say, she proved herself to be an enabler of a fascist, running over as quickly as she could to take advantage of the melting turd's love of ultra-capitalism to whisper, "Millions from our sick, we'll sell you our amazing NHS." What happens next? Well, when you see America's president being congratulated by some of the worst despots in the world, you can almost write the script in your head. Trump's brain will be going through all of the scenarios on how to silence his critics. He isn't Hitler, but Adolf also had those thoughts, as did the UDN Northern Ireland when I lived there. Hitler had some sap show-trialled and executed for setting fire to the Reichstag. The UDN Northern Ireland kicked off the Troubles with a series of bombings that were blamed on nationalists and Republicans during the civil rights uprise there. What is going on in the name of Americans is disgusting, dangerous for them and the world, but it is absolutely wonderful to see the resistance on the streets of New York and at airports all over the country. And we'll hear from some of that resistance later on. On this Burns-themed podcast, Victoria Pearson on the political gobbledygook now legitimised by May's Brexit and Trump, Chuck Hamilton raging on what is going on in Neverland and May's visit and his hopes for Scotland, Mara Leverkun on the hijacking of the Labour Party and the Scottish Labour Party. I've added a link to leftongag.wordpress.com explaining this attack. Deborah Torrance recites one of Robert Burns' best. Steve McAuliffe, in a tribute to Burns, tells us of liberty, do or die. Paul Sheridan, lead singer of The Wakes, on what Burns means to him and how an enthusiastic Gran introduced him to the Bard. Wee Rafe tells us about the less painful Burns night, and no fond kiss and a wee poem for Trump. As always, please go to our website for information on all of the contributors and on the musicians, leftongag.wordpress.com. We're on Twitter at _ungagged, and you'll also find us on facebook.com/ungagged. Music comes from The Wakes, a new single from Gutful, Battlefish Project, Jackal Trades, The Husky Tones, The Hurriers. Max Newland is up next on the anti-Trump protests in Idaho, his fears and the difficulties in reaching those who are supporting Trump and working together to create a better politics. But before him, this one is from Case's Conscience, This Is Fluid.
cold gray day in Moscow. Not that Moscow. Moscow, Idaho. It's a tiny town in northern Idaho whose main claim to fame is their college football team was recently elevated to the position directly above literally the worst in America. It's the city where I work, and, ergo, where I end up spending most of my time not spent hiding from the outside world. So, naturally, when a crowd of some 2,600 estimated marchers gathered to protest the election of Donald J. Trump for President of the United States, I ran into a couple of people I knew.
I'm here marching with women because I stand for equal human rights. I stand for the scientific method, logical thinking.
I am not okay with what's happening in our government right now, and this is the best, I think, way to protest.
I'm seeing signs for justice. I'm seeing signs for environmental rights, for gay rights, for everything. So using this is just such a great tool.
That shouting, by the way, you're hearing in the background, it's a response to a speech being given by Mohammed, an international student I worked closely with in the months leading up to the presidential election. There were lots more speakers that day, though, because the sound system wasn't great, you couldn't really hear all of them, but it was more the feeling that mattered. When I came home that day, the internet was buzzing about the march. Numbers were coming in. Millions of people in the USA alone, and still another million distributed across all seven continents, including 14 people in Antarctica, they all gathered to march. I watched the Trump campaign struggle to tread water afterwards, with embarrassing images surfacing comparing his inauguration to Barack Obama's in 2009. It's almost sad, really, the difference in attendance between the two events. But as I read all the lovely articles, the wonderful hopeful Facebook posts, the celebratory tweets from around the globe, a little itch started to form in the back of my brain. I was being reminded of one of my first steps into political activism, the Occupy Wall Street protests that took place in the late 2000s. I still remember the thrill of that nascent movement as it swelled, and I remember more sharply the pain of lost hope as it seemed to fold in on itself overnight. Our resistance, this resistance to the growing nationalist trends across the globe, cannot suffer the same fate. It must not. And in order to do that, I hereby set forth two goals. One, we must organize as we've never done before, more directly, more acutely, and more forcefully. Two, we must play to our strengths and show that a diverse and unified society can stop the flow of nationalism decisively. One of the great dangers we face right now, that I can see, is the danger that, given the current political climate in nations around the world, people with the skill to lead and the conscience to lead in good faith might become disinterested in participating altogether in politics. That scares me. I really fear that if the political game becomes so toxic and so unscrupulous at the highest levels, only people with toxic and unscrupulous intent will participate even at local levels. I know that's not what happened last Saturday, and I hope our continuing resistance can incorporate the kind of ideals of good leadership which will hopefully restore confidence that government can function without being completely disgusting at all levels. But the news of the last week has proven it's very, very good at being disgusting at all levels. Now, suppose we do get organized. And remember, in this particular situation, we have to out-organize fascists, which isn't easy on a good day. So suppose we buckle in and get real organized. That still leaves the problem of the people, approximately 30% of the population here in the States, that align with the nationalist movement but aren't literal straight-up Nazis. This is where I tap out. Somehow we got to reach these folks. Here, mostly poor, uneducated white men who feel that the increasing presence of other cultural groups weakens the nation they see as theirs. Men who were duped by Trump, sold a huge lie, and lost huge but don't even know it yet. What do you and I have that they could possibly want? Maybe all it'll take is to just let reality dawn on them. But taking the gamble that they'll wake up and see the con they just fell for, that's a pretty risky move. I want 2017 to be the fertile ground of reawakening in the U.S. and across the world. Maybe I'm sentimental, but I know this. Human beings work better together than they ever could alone. Collaboration is our strongest asset, not conflict.
I'm here today to support equal rights for everybody, be that women or people of color or disabled people, anyone who, everyone deserves to have the same rights.
Oh, the atmosphere here is incredible. Like, everybody's here, involved, like, committed, excited. It's just such a privilege.
Being out here right now is just everyone just supporting each other and being happy with each other and just, yeah.
So we join together and keep pushing. Good luck.
Lost its collective mind and given the keys to the country to a regime that has, in its very first week, restricted funds for NGOs in developing countries who help cancer sufferers and fight the spread of HIV, said that they'll ban migrants from 7 majority Muslim countries, although not those with actual connections to terrorist activities, nor countries where Trump has business interests, signed off on the North Dakota pipeline, which Trump makes money from, and Keystone XL, had journalists covering protests arrested and charged with felonies, for which they could face 10 years in jail for doing their jobs. The regime has pledged to go ahead with Trump's wall, launched an investigation into virtually non-existent voter fraud, translation, it'll be harder for you to vote, has frozen all federal jobs except the military, ordered the executive branch to begin preparation to repeal the Affordable Care Act, ordered the EPA and NPS to delete info about climate change from their websites, has blocked several agencies from Twitter, including the EPA and NPS, threatened to send in the feds to deal with Chicago, did not replace LGBT plus and climate change pages removed from the White House website, but did add a page about radical Islam, declared a national day of patriotic devotion, lied about the size of crowds at Trump's inauguration, lied about the weather at Trump's inauguration, and then called these lies alternative facts. When the US sneezes, the UK catches a cold. We now live in an age of gobbledygook doublespeak, where war is peace, extreme paranoia is security, torture absolutely works, and lies are an alternative fact, post-truth, or fake news. It's already happening here. My MP, Nadine Dorries, recently insisted that the pound, which is now so far through the floor we've had to build a new sub-basement, is the highest it's been in years. Theresa May and the three Brexiteers are busy striding around the UK, telling us that Brexit means Brexit, and that means a red, white and blue Brexit, and if you don't know what that means, well, you're an unpatriotic Ramona traitor. And if you don't know what that means, where have you been? We're all about the meaningless buzzwords now, didn't you know? Inventing all these terms allows May to chatter on forever on the Mar Show without actually saying a single thing. Isn't it wonderful? Brexit is the best thing that could possibly have happened to the Tories, because now they can march around yelling made-up words all the time and not have to worry about the fact that babies are being treated for meningitis on plastic chairs in waiting rooms, people are dying on the way home from the job centre having been found fit for work, our prison service is disintegrating to the point where riots are the norm, and our schools are so poorly funded that kids are lucky if they can read and write by the time they leave, but they'll still be taking a multi-million pound cut. It's a gift for them, a beautiful distraction from everyday issues that only affect peasants really, and so therefore aren't on the Tory agenda. Pesky inconsequentials like people freezing to death on our streets and starving while they wait for a GP appointment to get a food bank referral can be turned back on the people highlighting them by a simple, "Stop talking our country down, Ramona. This is all your fault. You're why people voted Trump." And I suppose, in a post-fact age, that could be considered a form of truth. The pound is tanking and the public services are crumbling because of those of us that voted to remain and don't like fascists, actually. Our massive financial issues are not caused by the Tories getting us further into debt than we've ever been, nor by a global financial crash or economic uncertainty caused by one of the biggest constitutional upheavals the UK has ever seen, or even by self-centred 1%ers hoarding money away in one of the global tax havens we apparently now aspire to be. In the age of alternative facts, we're poor because of, poor people. Yeah, that's it. The shirkers and the scroungers and the long-term sick. And the foreigners, obviously. Coming over here, taking our jobs whilst also cashing in on our benefits, being given mansions on the taxpayer for all their kids, even though the refugees swarming in here are all able-bodied men that should stay and fight in their own countries that we're bombing indiscriminately. Yeah, that makes total alternative sense. Blame them. Blame Labour. Blame the EU. Blame people with more than two kids. In fact, don't just blame them, punish them. Cap their tax credits, and if they conceive a third child as the result of a rape, make them relive that to some G4S crony with a clipboard in a dingy job centre interview room. Make them bring their existing kids along to watch Mummy break. It'll train them up in what you expect from life. Oh yes, the age of post-truth is just perfect for Miss May. Your multi-million pound nuclear weapon system fails a test just before MPs vote on whether to keep it? Don't worry, just don't tell them. Then, months later, when you're caught out and you're asked about it on live TV, just keep reminding people that that Jeremy Corbyn fella, well, he doesn't want you to have weapons of mass destruction at all, the selfish, incompetent bastard. George Orwell, who's currently spinning in his grave so fast we could turn him into a perpetual motion energy generator and use him to fight climate change, if we still believed in climate change, which of course we don't now because it isn't an alternative fact, told us that in times of universal deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. You wouldn't be listening to Ungagged if you didn't have at least a tiny grain of resistance in your soul. A voice, however small, on the inside, screaming that this isn't right. So to help you with your rebellion, I've compiled a handy guide to navigating our new language. So, alternative facts means lies. EU red tape means workers' rights, safety standards and human rights. Post-truth means lies. Fake news can mean real news, or it can mean lies, or it can mean something that your masters would rather you didn't know. This is where your critical thinking skills come into play. You remember those. They're in the same part of your brain that's shrieking that this isn't right. Check the sources, see if other sources are reporting the same thing, and wherever possible, look for direct quotes. Just because it's in the paper or on the telly doesn't mean it's true. Foreign news sources are often better at reporting on our news than domestic sources. Look at as many different sources as you can. Make America / Britain / France or whatever country great again means turn your country into a low-rent, plastic fascist dictatorship that gaslights its citizens. Compassionate conservatism means the Tories will do as they please and you paupers better suck it up. A shared society means that you get to share the pain while the Conservatives share the profits. Outright means fascist. No amount of rebranding, sanitising or doublespeak lies can change that. These are people who call for black genocide, enforced sterilisation of undesirables and an all-white nation state. They are fascists. 2016 was the year the cockroaches slithered out from under their rocks. 2017 has to be the year we start stomping. The fight back has started with the J20 protests and the Women's March, the biggest act of international solidarity I've ever seen, dwarfing the inauguration. That momentum has to keep building. If all those people turn out to protest the North Dakota pipeline, attend Black Lives Matter protests and block the construction of Trump's vanity wall, they can affect real change, real resistance. Then maybe 2018 will be the year we pull together for the sake of our collective future and finally build something worth having. A lie may be able to run around the world before the truth can get its boots on, but in the words of the late, great Terry Pratchett, the truth has got its boots on now, and it's about to start kicking.
From Chattanooga, Tennessee, in the U.S. of A., also called, by me at least anyway, Neverland, the land of those who never grew up. Or at least I did, until we went through the Lacking Glass and down into the rabbit hole to find that the narcissistic Mad Hatter and his Mad Tea Party managed to dethrone the psychopathic Queen of Hearts, who kept saying off with their head about folks ranging from Muammar Gaddafi to Julian Assange, and cheated the white rabbit out of his just due with help from the wicked witch of the South. Now we learn that the Hatter will see on his first official state visit the Wicked Witch of the East, which makes sense given that they both have evil winged monkeys for advisors. Folks, we are no longer in Kansas or Neverland. We are now in Wonderland. And we're not going to get home by clicking our heels together, wearing ruby slippers and saying, "There's no place like home, there's no place like home, there's no place like home." Because the Cheshire Cat, who is married to the Queen of Hearts and is friend across the pond, the Wizard of Oz, already took us too far away. What is the answer? Don't ask me, I'm just a wooden puppet who wants to someday become a real boy. Maybe, though, each of us is like the Scarecrow, the Tin Man, and the Lion. No one can give us what we already have. The brains to think for ourselves rather than accept the piles of Orwellian bullshit being spread over the landscape to further fertilize the fields to grow crops of wealth for the plutocrats and oligarchs. The courage to resist the long train of abuses and usurpations inventing a design to enslave us all under absolute despotism, and the heart not only to survive but to lift up and fight not just for ourselves but for each other and for those around us, and not just those but also those across borders and oceans, mountains and deserts, classes and religions. There is but one race, the human race, and there are no aliens because we are all from and of this planet. We are all Terrans, citizens of Earth, and we are all each other's brothers, sisters, and cousins. An injury to the least of us is an injury to all. Yes, with Peter Pan and his merry band of lost boys and girls mainlining liquidized volumes of Atlas Shrugged, with the Repugs in firm control of Congress while the Dems aid and abet them every step of the way, we are in for a rough ride. But if Saturday's outpouring of unity and goodwill all across the world has taught us anything, it's that the vast majority of us all around the planet are willing to stand up and say, "No more!" That we will not go gently into that good night, and we will not vanish without a fight. That the needs of the many outweigh the greed of the very few. That this world and its people are theirs no more. We may be in for a rough ride, but I recently heard on a TV show that the only way to get through hell is to go all the way through it. Our day will come, inshallah. Now, on to Scotland. I first became interested in my family's origins after watching the miniseries Roots on TV in January 1977. Damn, I just realized that was 40 years ago. Ben Vereen's character, Chicken George, was my favorite of the whole series and remained an idol of mine for years. Speaking of black heroes, I recently learned that the fictional characters, the Lone Ranger and Tonto, may actually be based on two African-American deputy U.S. Marshals in Indian Territory, Bass Reeves and George Johnson, who often worked together. Johnson grew up as a slave in the Creek Nation, Reeves in Arkansas, and while Reeves was unquestionably the best lawman of the Old West, Johnson was the near second in his own right. Okay, back on topic. After watching the Roots miniseries, I became fascinated with where my family might have come from, and I don't know what gave me the idea to look at maps, but in Scotland I found the town of Hamilton. Flushed with enthusiasm, I went to the public library to borrow what books they had on Scotland and its history, and those they had were two on the Scottish War of Independence, one focusing on William Wallace and the other on Robert the Bruce. From that time on, even without knowing yet any more of Scotland's history, the betrayals that led to the Union and the Jacobite Wars and the economic subjugation by the London government, I have believed that Scotland should be free. Of course, my views became less romantic and more nuanced later, but that belief has never gone away. When the devolution referendum was announced, I became a member of the Scottish National Party and remained so until the UK passed the law barring foreign citizens from being members of UK political parties. I was affiliated with the American branch that opened here in the early 21st century before that closed, due partly to that law, and also to the fact that neo-Confederates here, still under the influence of Walter Scott, as Mark Twain noted that they had been before the war, tried to co-opt it as a means of gaining legitimacy. By that time, in addition to associating online with members of the Scottish Socialist Party, I had become affiliated with the Scottish Republican Socialist Movement, which would have barred me from membership anyway if that had been known at the time. So, what in the age of an overgrown Oompa Loompa with Oompa Loompa-sized hands in the most powerful office of on earth will Scottish independence mean to me? For starters, the realization of a 40-year dream. Scotland deserves to be a nation of its own, with a government that has its own interests at heart and is in total control of its own affairs, without having its resources siphoned off and its needs and wishes ignored by a regime outside its borders that has little or no interest in the welfare of Scotland per Scots. Especially the pig-fucking cunts now in power, and the only possible vile opposition in almost as much disarray there as the Dems are here. Scotland regaining its independence and freedom after 410 years will be a beacon of hope for much of the world, and for me. The world needs that right now, and so do I. Igar Laha, Alba Gubra, peace out. P.S. Fito the Cheeto.
And I want to talk about the hijacking of labor at conference last year. Anne Black, the most popular NEC member representing CLPs, recognizes concerns about rule violations designed to capture labor NEC fixing are both legitimate and serious. At conference, there were several deceptions and at least one rule violation used to unlawfully capture the Labour Party by the pro-war and tacitly pro-austerity wing of Labour. Paddy Lillis, the conference chair at the time, denied a card vote on the floor of conference. This can be seen on the Tuesday morning conference video. This is a violation of Chapter 3, Clause 3, Rule 3 of the Labour Party Rules 2016. This violation can be viewed on the Tuesday morning video conference, which is still visible on the Labour Party YouTube channel at exactly 31 minutes in to 34 minutes in, at which point Paddy seeks to explain his violation. At 43, 55, Minutes in, a delegate rises to explain the rule violation which just occurred, and then again in further detail, 48 minutes in. You can watch this online. I recommend you go to watch the YouTube video. You can also see long-serving NEC member Christine Shawcroft rising to the stage to assert that a card vote must be taken. The effect of the rule is to add two Blairite members from Scotland and Wales to the NEC, meaning that the Corbynites who controlled approximately 40%, but were set to control 50% after a huge vote in favour of every left slate NEC representative in June. Corbynites now, therefore, will only enjoy 48% control again, and therefore not be able to stop the purges and other illegitimate moves to select Wonger Moremonger MPs and fix internal leadership elections, including denying people the vote they had been promised. Brecon CLP has now heroically condemned this move, and details about this can be found on both the Vox Political blog and the Squawk Box blog. The motion passed states clearly that due to the NEC being corrupted in this manner, Brecon has resolved that it is no longer bound by NEC decisions. Several other CLPs are in the process of moving similar resolutions, including Lewes CLP. Contact the Word newspaper if you'd like to participate in this struggle to rectify the corruption of the NEC or have any further information on it. Or you can contact me on Twitter at Mara Leverkin. There is evidence provided by Vox Political and Squawk Box that the CAC was misled by party staff and therefore misled conference when they announced that the NEC had agreed to several rule changes, including the NEC fix rule change and several other rule changes that had been hard won, would be voted on as a single block of rule changes. Anne Black, the most popular elected NEC member in the recent CLP NEC elections, acknowledged recently on the Vox Political blog that these concerns were serious and legitimate, but this isn't enough. Until many CLPs reject and dismiss the new NEC, like Brecon has, its abusive rule will go unchallenged and Corbyn will be vulnerable to its attacks. There is an anonymous, minimally censored discussion of this article and drafting of motions similar to the Brecon CLP motions ongoing at an address that will be published on the article associated with this podcast. Thanks to Vox Political and Squawk Box for their work on highlighting this.
Do you know that White D from Benefit Street? She's on Big Brother.
Oh, that'll be why they've reincarnated Robbie Burns to put him in Benefit Street. You know the poet?
Aye, but I mean, he's not about, is he?
He is about now. It's happened. It's happening. Reality TV brought the Barb back from the dead to replace White D.
Barb from the graveyard, they won't let him back in. He's a zombie womanizer and he's guilty of sin. Want an old Scots poem? Just ask him. Want a sensitive soul? Just add gin. He's struggling to comprehend 2014. Not that that would stop his notorious courting. To get the fun you need to fame, poetry's obsolete. So he signed up to a show called Benefit Street. He recites more scripts than Meryl Streep and chooses Ecky over Lecky cause the price too steep. Cameras always on him, one way or another. Big Brother is watching him, watching Big Brother. The poignant moment, so succinct and apt and cunning. He verbally slapped the cunts currently running. His country being sold out to Amazon and Google, but they cut away to him munching a pot noodle.
The reincarnated Robbie Burns last night with the shovel, a hip flask and a flashlight. No one cares what Robbie thinks about taxing the elite. They only care about Robbie Burns on Benefit Street. The reincarnated Robbie Burns last night with the shovel, a hip flask and a flashlight. No one cares what Robbie thinks about taxing the elite. They only care what Robbie Burns on Benefit Street.
The bard is a joke now, the viewers are laughing at attack by paparazzi in his own home habitat. Mine's too small for concepts, you need the characters. Won't get funding for an ideal issue, fit the narrative. We need two-dimensional reshapes with three stripes. Take great delight whenever he fights. Smokes for Lindy roll-ups to suppress his appetite. Food's really on the menu, cause money's too tight. Watches colour TV, cause nothing's ever black and white. As he prays for a cracking right before he's back inside those losing get a doing as the going gets good. Poverty porn hustlers razzle with the Ned troop. Get loop as the anally attentive get inventive. Infant new ways to fuck you with financial incentive. Rabbi painted a picture about it and became quite inventive. But it started with the spliff where the episode ended.
The reincarnated Rabbi bombs last night with the shovel, a hip flask and a flashlight. No one cares what Rabbi thinks. I've been taxing the elite. They only care what Rabbi bombs on Benefit Street. The reincarnated Rabbi bombs last night with the shovel, a hip flask and a flashlight. No one cares what Rabbi thinks. I've been taxing the elite. They only care what Rabbi bombs on Benefit Street.
The bard is so famous now his name is muddied by broadsheets. Clarkson and Little John belittle his broad speech. His regional accent is mocked and mocked the weak. George Osborne uses him as an election plea. From the street young team to the club drug scene, thinks Rabbi bombs is just another Marvin from the scheme. Marvel Super T, the anti-hero, ignorant the Roman numerals, concept of zero by high, sell low. Hi, I'm here to fix a deficit, deliver deliberate deception to the desperate in a desolate square mile, renaming whole towns, addressing the haggis with the cane, pass me downs. They are playing the system by refusing to die. On ratings and a lie, squeeze middle, ignore what Eric Pickle's biscuits cost. Blame the fictional devil, the fiddler of the north.
On benefits and proud of the hunger and the struggle, the 8% press I can to keep warm huddle on. Benefits and proud of the prepay meter beeping, the cheap and nasty noodles, bad eating, lack of eating. Proud of inflation, holding my family to ransom. Proud of being sick, hated, jaded and sanctioned on. Benefits and proud of the overcrowded tenement, suicide attempt, rent, debt, let the sentiments and benefit and proud of the MP's expenses. The Queen gets a wage rise to buy higher fences. Proud of where I've lived, become in such a dive. On benefits and proud of never watching Channel 5.
Hi, it's Deborah Torrens from Mogai. And this is our one and only Rabbi Burns, our beloved bard. Is there for honest poverty that hangs his heed in all that? The coward slave we pass him by, we dare be poor for all that. For all that and all that, our toils obscure and all that. The rank is but the guinea stamp, the man's the gowd for all that. What though unhamely fair we dine, we're hodden grey and all that. Gie fools their silks and knaves their wine, a man's a man for all that. For all that and all that, their tinsel show and all that, the honest man, though e'er say poor, is king of men for all that. Ye see yon birkie called a lord, who struts and stares and all that. Though hundreds worship at his word, he's but a coof for all that. For all that and all that, his ribboned star and all that. The man o' independent mind, he looks and laughs at all that. A prince can mak a belted knight, a marquis duke and all that, but an honest man's a boon as might, good faith he money for that. For all that and all that, their dignities and all that, the pith o' sense and pride o' worth are higher rank than all that. Then let us pray that come it may, as come it will for all that, that sense of worth o'er the earth shall bear the gree and all that. For all that and all that, it's coming yet for all that, that man to man the world o'er shall brothers be for all that.
Hello, my name's Steve McAuliffe. Robert Burns was the product of the Scottish Enlightenment ideas around the time of the French and the American revolutions. It is then as a toast to Robert Burns that I now read for you this piece, which I've entitled Liberty, Let Us Do or Die. Liberty has lost its spell and democracy maintains itself by the promise of substantial gifts to the masses of the people. So ask yourself why no one speaks of liberty anymore, why no one seems to even think that the notion of liberty is important or even relevant to their daily lives. Simply raise the concept in the company of friends or colleagues and watch as their eyes glass over. Trust me, no one speaks of liberty anymore. It has become an abstract too tiresome to decode, let alone to interact with. And the libertarian writings of David Hume and Paine are not studied at schools and colleges, nor the poetry and essays of Blake and Defoe and Robbie Burns, let alone Shelley's Mask of Anarchy. The latter, understandably, perhaps, for what modern education minister would permit the learning of the lines, "Rise like lions after slumber, in unvanquishable number, shake your chains to earth like dew, which in sleep had fallen on you. Ye are many, they are few." It is far better to fill those lamb-like brains with tales of noble kings and queens and generals and heads of state, as opposed to the geniuses and visionaries who once fired the hearts and minds of the populace and steered governments when they spoke of liberty and autonomy and the shaking off of mental chains. And so it is that the most draconian of government surveillance bills is passed in Parliament and no one notices. No one bats an eyelid, for this is how the state likes it. Distractions and misdirections are passed down via diktats from an increasingly oppressive state and are duly filtered through the propaganda arm of the mass media for our consumption. Back in 1644, the poet John Milton complained of a populace who preferred bondage with ease to strenuous liberty. He was expressing almost exactly the same sentiments that I recently, unwittingly echoed in my poem Rejecting Soma, when I talked of drip-fed Soma and incremental soft dogma. In short, cakes and circuses for the masses. And as our systems break down, our infrastructures crumble, prices rise, wages freeze, and our pensions are ram-raided, other victims are assigned the blame for the nation's demise. Anger and blame is redirected away from traitorous ministers and thieving fat cats and financial hucksters towards the voiceless, the benefit claimants, the single mothers, the immigrants, and great swathes of the populace simply buy the lie hook, line and sinker, not even realising, or perhaps not caring, that it is their own offspring who will pick up the tab for this latest corrupt government's unfettered treachery. Despite the media's tried and tested distraction techniques, we are actually now entering potentially momentous times, times that threaten liberties gained not just over the last few decades, but over the past few hundred years. Right now, Theresa May is proposing a repeal bill, described by none other than the Financial Times as a reinstatement of Henry VIII's powers. A bill which, should it pass, will give her government unprecedented powers to repeal or amend any former EU law, many of which have been described as being central to individual liberty. So I guess we can expect the highly principled Principal Secretary of State for exiting the European Union, that self-professed Conservative Libertarian David Davis MP, to be tendering his resignation as soon as possible on this most fundamental matter of principle. Yeah, okay, don't hold your breath on that one. It seems principles only stretch so far in politics. So it would seem then that when certain government ministers pre-Brexit talk keenly, passionately even, about a restoration of parliamentary democracy, they actually meant a return to 1539 and Henry VIII's own particular brand of parliamentary sovereignty. Correct me if I'm wrong on this, but that wasn't exactly in the brochure, was it? And the irony in all this is that in this nation, capitalism actually flourished under liberty. Voltaire himself once marvelled at the breaking down of stifling convention and hierarchy in England, not to mention the vibrant marketplace of ideas and schemes that he witnessed flourishing and blossoming everywhere he looked. Upon visiting the Royal Exchange, since sold off to a Canadian company in 2013 by these patriotic Tories, by the way. He commented, "The Jew, the Mahometan Muslim, and the Christian transact together as though they all possess the same religion. It seems the abandonment of liberty as a bedrock of capitalism occurred with the election of Thatcher here in the UK and Reagan in the US, whereupon the last vestiges of liberty were incrementally transferred wholesale to the financial markets. As the great Scottish philosopher and libertarian David Hume noted, authoritarianism is anathema to creativity and vitality. It results in lethargy and permits corruption." Can you think of a better summation of where we find ourselves now? Lethargy and corruption. And so we must now accept that the neoliberal free market philosophy has failed us, and disastrously so. And yet we must also recognise that the state, for all its power grabs and assault upon our liberties, no longer controls the means of indoctrination. Thanks to a communications revolution, the potential of which we've barely even begun to understand, we are still finding our feet in a world in which new narratives are forever evolving, and beneath the narratives new themes take hold. We are becoming the editors of our own realities, and this is anathema to those who would hold control over our very imaginations. Via social media, kinships are born and solidarity is cemented. New philosophies may take root and flourish, and the greatest philosophy we must share is that of liberty. And until we achieve the liberty that we must once again believe to be our birthright, then dissent is the only available option open to us. As Hume pointed out, it is seldom that liberty of any kind is lost all at once. The dance is a totalitarian tiptoe, and thanks to all the cakes and circuses and drip-fed soma, we are perilously close now to surrendering the last of what took centuries of fighting to acquire. So I'd like to finish with some lines from Robbie Burns, and please excuse the accent. "By oppression's woes and pains, by your sons in servile chains, we will drain our dearest veins, but they shall be free. Lay the proud usurpers low, tyrants fall in every foe, liberties in every blow. Let us do or die."
My grandma McFarlane was a remarkable woman. She'd been widows in her early 30s, and when my mum was 9 and my uncle was 4, and she pretty much raised them on her own. In her working life, she had been a teacher at St Aidan's High School in Wishaw, and she had a great love of poetry and of books, a love that she bestowed upon her own grandchildren. And she looked after my brother and myself when our own parents were at work. She pretty much swapped the classroom to play at Postman Pat and Paddington Bear, although I must also say that my brother had a great love of darts, and very often she would be Tony Green to his Jim Bowen, although I think that she pretty much enjoyed using this opportunity to help him develop his numeracy skills. My grandma would often quote lines from poems, which is a remarkable feat, sometimes met with looks of bemusement by people at shop counters. I think her dreams were realised one day when, at her house after school, I said to her, "Grandma, do you have any classics?" My grandma then took me up to her room and into the back cupboard, where she pulled out literally hundreds of books. "We've got Burns here, you like Burns, and here's Kidnapped, and have you ever read the 39 Steps?" Eventually, after much searching and pulling out of books, I had to say to her, "Grandma, I just meant the biscuits." Burns was always a poet who she was able to read off the top of her head and without even blinking and rattle it out. Poetry, she always said, needs to be spoken to appreciate it. Now, without knowing Burns in the detail that my grandma did, I had a particular fondness for Tam O'Shanter, and I used to love going down to Ayr, down to Alloway, the Old Kirk. The smell still of the chlorine from air baths lingering on her skin and hair. I would usually, me, my mum, my dad and my wee brother, dance about in the graveyard like a bunch of nutters. One of us would shout, "Well done, Cutty Sark!" And then we'd chase each other down to the bridge at Brigadoon. My mum usually kidding on to be a witch, although, thankfully, she could cross the running water. So these Bond's experiences aside, being asked to analyse his poetry at school was never really something I enjoyed, and if truth be told, it kind of put me off him for a long time. Maybe that's just not an experience that most 13-year-olds have. We've got bigger things in our mind at that point, such as Who's got an empty we can go to? Will we get served beer? Are these jeans baggy enough? Then what Burns was trying to say. I must do admit, though, there was a kind of time, there was an ode to Burns in a copy of the fanzine, Not The View, and I remember it well. Goal scorer of many perts, scorer of a wonder goal against Hertz, to sing your praises were awfully keen, but nothing rhymes with Van Hooydonk. Fast forward to I was about 16 or so, and I was kind of really getting into music, in particular into Luke Kelly. I tried to collect any albums of his where possible, and eventually I found a collection of his songs, and this was where I'd have heard Parcel of Rogues for the first time, a Scottish poem about English rule being sung by an Irishman. I think to myself, there's more to Burns than witches and wizards, and I suppose it kind of opened up my consciousness to the political message in the works of Burns. Not long after that, I found Christy Moore singing The Curragh of Kildare, a song that he attributed at that time to Burns, although there had been some slight disputes over that over the years. Christy kind of disputes his own claim now. And with further reference into it, it's The Winter That Is Past rather than the Curragh title that's been given. So origins, changes and the history of the song aside, it reinvigorated an interest in Burns through song and from a different route than just the books and poems and analysis in school. And as time went on, Dick Gawkin would continue this for me. My grandma died in 2011 and she was 90 and I was 30, very much a man and so far apart from the wee boy that one time asked her for some classic biscuits. A great deal of my love for poetry, for books and also my understanding of appropriate table manners attributed to my grandma. On the time when we had to empty her house for that last time, I took a painting that my dad had done for her of Don Quixote, another literary figure, figure from literature, a mentor book of Irish poetry, and a wee brown book, Poems and Songs of Robert Burns. And at Burns Night, I'll have a couple of drams. I'll do a wee bit of poetry, reading out loud, of course, to fully appreciate it. And I'll think of my grandma. And I might even just have a wee classic biscuit with my tea as well.
It's gonna take a while. dream never dies. In the darkest star, there's a light that still shines. We will never give up until we won this fight. You can try to kill the dreamer, but the dream never dies.
Red Race here, your own wee chief pudding that's never won a race. Ah, Burns night. Just run the offending area under a cold tap for 10 minutes, let a skin dry and then slather yourself in Sudocrem. If the bun about the size of a 10 pence piece, get yourself down to A&E pronto, where our amazing and very much unappreciated doctors and nurses sort you out nae bother. But what about that other Burns night? A less painful one that comes with a belter of a dinner. Haggis, neeps and tatties. You notice I said dinner and no supper. It's always called Burns Supper, but if you call your tea by that name down our street, you likely get battered. Which is actually how I like my haggis. Battered and served with chips, fresh out of Miller's Nook Chippy. A wee bit of free advertising there for my local scran shop. But with a hot Scot in a White House, a lot of us are feeling that a star of hope has left us. We're grieving your misfortune, either quietly at home or by taking to the streets in protest. And a guy who encouraged folk to march on Washington after the election of Obama is now greeting because women and our supporters all over the world are getting together unified by our disgust of our new leader of a Western world. Trump claimed the rain stopped for his inauguration, as though by divine intervention. But if there really was such a thing, I doubt he'd be president at all. A man of a people, and his golden lift, wee shower of yes men. He couldn't make it up. So, I fond kiss, no lightly. When a world dignities meet Trump, especially a woman, it may look an awkward handshake, and a quick rummage through the horn bag for the horn sanitizer. I stand in solidarity with a folk in the world who sent a affy clear message to old Fezziwig, as I like to call him. Keep your toty horns to yourself, Mr. President. So I'm going to leave you with a poem I wrote, a wee gift to Trump for Scotland on his inauguration. It's called Getty. It not so much you lost your trousers while playing to a bunch of losers, or your face like we called spam, we just prefer you go dayworm. Hold up your toted gem-free horn while stoning on a White House lawn, and pledge all your sleek at heart, cos we no gay a monkey's fart. So cheerio pals, see you next time.
Size and growth. sighs and